This is the Chamber Chat Podcast, the show dedicated to chamber professionals to spark ideas and to get actionable tips and strategies to better serve your members and community.
And now your host, his favorite gas station is Bucky's. He's my dad, Brandon Burton.
Welcome to the Chamber Chat Podcast. This is your host, Brandon Burton, and you're joining us today for episode 102 of the Chamber Chat Podcast, where it is my goal to introduce you to people and ideas to help you better serve your chamber members and your community. Today, for this episode, we have Matt Pivarnik with us from the Greater Topeka Partnership in Kansas. And many of you are probably familiar with Matt, but Matt is the CEO of the Greater Topeka Partnership. The partnership is a collaborative organization that houses the Greater Topeka Chamber of Commerce, Go Topeka Economic Development Organization, Visit Topeka, Downtown Topeka Inc., Forge, Young Professionals, and a handful of other community and economic development organizations. Matt joined the Topeka team in January 2016. Matt is the past chair of the Chamber of Commerce Executives of Kansas, past chair of the U.S. Chamber Institute for Organizational Management's National Board of Trustees, past chair of the Board of Regents for the U.S. Chamber Institute for Organization Management at the University of Arizona, a graduate of the U.S. Chambers Institute for Organization Management, completed the program at the Center for Creative Leadership, and certified chamber executive. Past commissioner of the Certified Chamber Executive Program, serves on the American Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors and past executive committee member. A member of the U.S. Chamber Committee of 100, serves on the President's Advisory Council for Northeast State University, and is on the advisory board for the Washburn University School of Business. Past chair for the board of Oklahoma Chamber of Commerce Executives, on the board for the Kansas Department of Commerce Team Kansas, on the board of the Shawnee County Parks and Recreation Foundation, and is a member of the board of the Greater Topeka United Way. He recently completed a program through the Bloomberg Harvard City Leadership Initiative in New York. Matt was the founder of MACO, a regional educational conference for economic development and chamber executives from Missouri, Arkansas, Kansas, and Oklahoma. Matt moved to Topeka from Tulsa, Oklahoma, where he was previously with the Tulsa Regional Chamber. Matt has a bachelor's degree in business management from Northeastern State University in Oklahoma. And Matt and his wife, Wendy, live in Topeka, Kansas, with their youngest son, Trey. And Matt is a proud dad and also a new grandfather. It's amazing that Matt has time to even come with us to be on the podcast with us today with how involved he is with everything. But we're grateful to have Matt join us today on the Chamber Chat Podcast. And we'll be talking about partnerships in our discussion today. And we will get into this discussion right after this brief break. Would you be interested in creating even more value from the processes that you're already doing on a daily basis? Swipeit has been one of my sponsors for Chamber Chat from the beginning. Swipeit provides credit card payment solutions that will save your chamber up to 40% on your processing fees, and Swipeit can integrate your credit card processing seamlessly into your existing membership software. Swipeit does not charge chambers to switch, and they will make switching simple. In addition to these savings, Swipeit has an affinity program for chambers of commerce, so you can earn more non-dues revenue to support your budget. Learn more about Swipeit by requesting your free cost savings analysis and become more profitable today by visiting chamberchatpodcast.com/CC, as in credit card. Again, that's chamberchatpodcast.com/CC, and you can join many other chambers as you begin swiping with Swipeit. All right, Matt, thank you for joining us today on the Chamber Chat Podcast. If you will, take a moment to say hello to all the chamber champions that are out there listening and share something interesting about yourself so we can all get to know you a little bit better.
Sure. Well, first, Brandon, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And it's man, it's awesome to be able to spend time with my chamber colleagues around the country. and will never pass up an opportunity to do that. I learned more from them than they could ever possibly learn from me, which I think is the beauty of our industry. You know, the interesting thing about myself right now, I have to just share a couple of things that are going on in my life. One is, you mentioned in your introduction that I'm a new grandfather, and I'm all about that. So I'm absolutely obsessed with being the grandfather of an 8-month-old baby girl, Leah. And I know that that's not all that interesting, but to me, it's the most interesting thing that's happening in the world right now. And then the other one, which is fascinating to me, is that my youngest son just committed a couple days ago to play college football. And so we're extending our athletic involvement for another 4 years. And he got a football scholarship, and we're proud of him and excited. And so that's probably the things that are highest on my list at the moment.
That is awesome. Well, you're doing things right. If the, you know, being the new grandfather is the most interesting thing right now, and your son's new announcement with his college football scholarship, that you're doing things right. So thank you for sharing. Just where you want to share where your son's going and maybe kind of what position he plays, and sure. Yeah. We can all keep an eye out for him.
Yeah. So one of the reasons I'm so happy is because he's actually going to Washburn University, which is a Division II school in Topeka, Kansas. And he had a lot of opportunities around the country, and we wanted him to stay close to home. And the good thing is he is staying close to home, and he'll be a tight end. So he'll be one of those 6'4", 6'5" kids that weigh 260 pounds, blocking most of the time and maybe catching a pass here and there.
Awesome. Now that's great that he's staying local so you guys can catch some of those games and not have to travel. Absolutely. For every game.
Absolutely.
That's great. Well, share with us a little bit about the Greater Topeka partnership, kind of the size, location, staff, budget, that center sort of thing. So we have an idea of the perspective that you're coming from.
Yeah. So the partnership is actually, it's new. It was created in January 2018. It is, you mentioned in my introduction, it has multiple organizations. It's a I wouldn't say that it's an umbrella organization, really. It's a collaborative agency that has what was a lot of disparate and separate organizations all working together within one. Pre-pandemic, we were at about 50 staff members. Now we're at about 40. We've actually learned how to be pretty lean and mean. So I don't see us ever going back to 50, actually. I think we can stay at that 40 or low 40s level. We have an incredible team, about a $10 million annual budget because we manage the economic development organization, and we also manage incentives and things like that. It can range anywhere from on a low end, $10 million a year, up to $14 to $15 million a year. So there's a lot of organizations that are part of it. But the four primary organizations are the Greater Topeka Chamber, Go Topeka Economic Development Organization, Downtown Topeka Incorporated, and Visit Topeka. Those are all standalone 501c6s. They have presidents. So since we're talking the chamber world today, the president of our chamber is Curtis Sneeden. And Curtis is actually reports to me as the CEO of the partnership, but he is accountable to the board of directors for the Greater Topeka Chamber of Commerce.
All right. That is interesting. Kind of getting a little behind the curtains a little bit as to how the partnership is set up and organized, but that helps as we get into our topic today of partnerships. A few weeks ago, I had Megan Lucas on, mm-hmm. on the podcast, and she was talking about her experience there in Lynchburg with the merging economic development with their chamber. And this time, you know, as chambers throughout the country are, you know, facing things that they haven't experienced before, partnerships become a necessity for some chambers, and for others, it becomes something very strategic that allows for greater work to be done in your community. So I'd mentioned as I was going through your bio that you previously came from the Tulsa Regional Chamber, where that was a partnership organization before you came to Topeka. Do you want to fill us in a little bit on kind of where you came from and how things look when you came to Topeka and kind of what that what that looked like for you?
Yeah, I was very fortunate to be in Tulsa for 17 years working at the Tulsa Regional Chamber. One of my mentors and best friends is Mike Neal, who is the CEO of that organization. That organization probably, gosh, I remember looking at all of our logos. It seems like we may have had 14 different organizations, but primarily the Chamber, the Economic Development Organization, the Visitors Bureau, Film and Music Commission, the list goes on and on. When I came to Topeka, I really didn't come into a full partnership organization. I actually came to work for the Chamber, and then I was actually leased out in a way to the Economic Development Organization. There was a management agreement, but they really operated as two separate organizations. I was really the only thing that they had in common. And what I realized, it didn't bother me to leave a partnership or an alliance structure and go to the standalone organizations, because I didn't really know what I had until I didn't have it anymore. But when I got here, I realized, oh my, this is not good. Having the Convention and Visitors Bureau down the street, having the downtown organization in another building, the Chamber and the Economic Development organizations really being separate organizations. I realized what I had in Tulsa is that the teamwork actually creates the dream work, and it's pretty darn hard to have the teamwork superficially. And so our elected officials here and our private sector leaders and our elected officials said, if we're going to compete with the rest of the world, we have to have some of what's going on in these other communities that have true partnerships.
Absolutely. And obviously every community is very different. And for some communities, it might make sense to keep things separate. But I see from the perspective you're coming from where it helps to have the unified effort. But as you mentioned, coming from Tulsa to Topeka, what were some of those things that you felt like were missing when you came to a standalone chamber after being at a partnership for 17 years?
Well, first, it's just that collaboration. And I mean, if you think about it, Chris Fair with Resonance Group did a presentation that I watched one time, and he basically said that of the top 10 reasons that people move or create a company in a community, and the top 10 reasons people would visit a community, almost in every community, seven of those are overlapping. So if seven of those are overlapping, then why are those organizations not working better together in their brand equity, their brand identity, their marketing? I mean, they might be marketing to different groups of people, but the messaging and the brands really should be cohesive and consistent. The other thing, too, is just the ability to support one another when something happens that's not positive. And I tell you what, getting here, I missed being able to walk right down the hall and talking to the president of the Visitors Bureau. I had to schedule a coffee or a lunch or go over to somebody's office. I realized, you know, I know there are some communities that do make sense out of not creating alliances and partnerships. I struggle a little bit more with that. It's hard to convince me that not having a formal or at least an informal partnership is ever a bad idea.
Yeah, no, I think it's always good to have some strategy at least to come together and work together. So what does the structure look like for you there at the Topeka partnership as far as how you brought things together? How was that led? Was that board members? Was that when you came there kind of putting the bug in the ears of the different organizations of let's explore this? Or how did that come to be?
Well, I appreciate you asking me about the structure because one of the things I was very fortunate in that at the Chamber, our senior VP of the Chamber at the time, Government Affairs, was Curtis Sneeden, who's now the president of the Chamber, was formerly a corporate attorney with Payless Shoes, the corporate headquarters. So having a corporate attorney on my team was very helpful. But one of the things I really liked, because I immediately just, there's a joke around Topeka and they call it Matt's going into his IT mode, his in Tulsa mode. Yeah. So I immediately want to just replicate what I had in Tulsa for 17 years because I loved it so much. But, you know, Curtis in our community pushed back a little bit and said, there are way too many of these models out there. Why don't we go and study a bunch of them and let's take the best of all of them and put them together. Probably our guiding star was the Allegheny Conference in Pittsburgh. And, you know, I had always known a lot about the Pittsburgh Chamber of Commerce. It was not until we did an intercity visit there that I realized that the Pittsburgh Chamber of Commerce was actually part of this bigger organization called the Allegheny Conference. And so really the Allegheny Conference was our guiding star, but we used Oklahoma City, we used Des Moines, we used Tulsa, and we put together a structure that quite frankly, I think right now is probably one of the better in the United States. Interestingly, we didn't roll up a whole bunch of 501c6s. So the Chamber and the Economic Development Organization, the Visitors Bureau, they're all still standalone 501c6s.
Okay.
We did create an organization called the Greater Topeka Partnership, which is a 501c6. On January 1st, 2018, we all, on December 31st, 2017, we were all, quote, laid off, end quote, from our jobs. And on January 1st, we all became employees of this organization called the Greater Topeka Partnership. So the 501c6s of the chamber and the economic development organization, those organizations, they don't have employees. We're all employees of the partnership, but they do have officers and those boards meet separately. And then the other thing that I think is really important is no one organization is subservient to another organization. So it's a true collaboration. So you might ask, how do you avoid conflict? Well, my bosses, the people that I work for, is an organization called the Chairs Council. So the board of the partnership is made up of the Chairs Council, and that is the chair and chair-elect of each of those four major sponsoring organizations. They serve on the Chairs Council, and then there's a handful of at-large folks that cannot serve on any of the boards, and that makes up my board of the Chairs Council of the Greater Topeka Partnership.
So kind of brings up an interesting thought as you were talking about the structure. You had mentioned at the beginning that pre-pandemic, you guys had about 50 staff. Now you're about 40 running lean and mean. And you'd mentioned how there's overlap with these organizations, CVB, Economic Development Chamber, things like that. So with smaller staff now, is the staff pretty much devoted to the different segments within the partnership, or are the staff members overlapped at all with their responsibilities?
So that's a great question. So there are a lot of staff that are dedicated to their specific 501c6, but then there's shared services. So for example, we have a CFO, and she has a 2-person staff. So we have a 3-person finance department, whereas prior everybody had their bookkeeper and they outsourced their accounting services. We took the marketing and communications folks from each of the organizations and we created an internal agency. And so we have a marketing communications team of about 7. Okay. And but they really treat all of those different organizations as clients. That was a model that I actually pulled from Tulsa that worked real well in Tulsa. Our resource development, our fundraising, we were able to centralize that. I'm a shared service, so I'm actually shared amongst all of those organizations. So there's a lot that are dedicated to one of the brands, but then there are quite a few of us who are actually shared resources and shared employees, and we actually get cost shared from all the different organizations.
All right. So I would say it's probably not a bad thing for you to be in IT mode from time to time with the Tulsa. I mean, Tulsa is a great model to follow for sure. Reason why
I got to tell you a funny story. When Mike Neal, you know, he came from Nashville, but he was in Monroe, Louisiana for a long time. And he was in Monroe for so long. And when he would start with in Monroe and Tulsa, we would all start rolling our eyes. And I swore I would never do that. Oh my gosh, I do it so much. And I think about Mike, but I appreciate what he brought from Nashville and what he brought from Monroe. Yeah. And it was very helpful to us in Tulsa. So we got tired of hearing, well, in Monroe, this, but I'm doing the same thing here. I can't help it because I was there for 17 years. I learned a lot. working for those folks.
And you have to give the context too of what you're bringing to the table, you know, and it, it helps to say when in Tulsa, IT. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love it. So for Chamber Champions listening, if I always wonder when is the right time to consider entering into a formal partnership versus maybe a more informal, you know, strategic partnership of sorts. What kind of things would you weigh out or suggest for other chamber professionals to weigh out as they consider these types of partnerships?
Yeah, Brandon, it's tricky. And so to me, you as a leader of one of those organizations, if it's you that wants it and the community doesn't, then it is not the right time.
No.
But if it's the community that wants it, if it's your elected leaders, if it's your private sector leaders, and especially as this model is taking shape around the country, I think that's what's really important. I average three calls a week with communities that are contemplating this structure. And for probably in 2/3 of them start with elected and private sector leaders, and 1/3 of them start with staff leaders. So the community has to want it first. And then the other thing too is you have to love your community so much that you might actually lose something, especially on the ego standpoint. So, you know, you have to have a group of staff that love the community more than they love their specific role or position within their organization. And that happened here. I mean, quite frankly, we had several CEOs of organizations that put their hand up and say, if it's better for Topeka, I will become part of this partnership. And I know that I'm going to go from, you know, being primarily responsible to a board to being responsible to a CEO and a board. And those aren't always easy decisions to make. And those are tough.
No, I can't think of a time when it is an easy decision in that scenario, especially when you have ego, and not necessarily in a bad way, but just to be able to swallow that pride and say, if this is better for the community, that's great that they were willing to do that. What are some of the key benefits, EC? You had mentioned collaboration, but by coming together kind of under one roof, if you will, where do you see the biggest benefits?
Really probably in economies of scale and the talent that we're able to bring to the table. So there's a few. We have a world-class marketing communications team, and we actually hired a corporate marketing communications person to be our senior VP. None of us would have been able to afford him or that team on our own. Our CFO is also world-class, and we wouldn't have been able to afford her on our own. We have an economist that we share. And that's one thing I had in Tulsa that I always really appreciated. And having an economist, again, none of our organizations could have afforded that economist on their own. And even just, let's get right down to just some basic things. Our offices, we're in beautiful space. And I mean, it is world-class. And when you walk into our space, you feel like you're in a major metro area. None of us could afford this space on our own. So we share space, we share staff, we share conference rooms, we share coffee. it makes all the sense in the world to share those things. And so we see a big return on that investment. And quite frankly, let me tell you about why we're at 40 staff and we started at 50. We really had to make an agreement that creating this partnership wouldn't be a negative for anybody. So we used attrition to get our staff. So when we put all of our staffs together, we were at 50. We didn't need to be at 50 because we had overlap. So we used attrition to get us to where we are now. But just think about it. There are 40 of us now, which all the organizations separate, there were 50. So think about how much money we're saving for our stakeholders and our taxpayers by doing that.
For sure. So, you know, you mentioned a couple times the marketing communications talent, if you will, that you have there. And I think that's so wise to be able to leverage, you know, marketing communications with among, you know, the chamber side and the visitor side and economic development to really prop up your community and shine a spotlight on it from all different angles. Is there any examples of that that come to mind of how they've been able to really leverage the marketing and communications as a team like that?
Yeah, so our economic development organization is running a program right now called Choose Topeka. And Choose Topeka is one of the programs that we will pay you to move to Topeka. We'll give you $15,000 if you move here. Uh-huh. When you're trying to convince people to move to your community, I'm not sure the economic development organization is the best marketing organization to pitch that, but convention and visitors bureaus are pretty darn good at that. So being able to work together with our CVB, very helpful in having that. One other thing, we actually hired a PR firm out of New York City, and that's helped us a lot. Another example of something we would have never been able to afford each of us on our own, but together we can. So I would just say that, you know, that Choose Topeka program is an example, but we have multiples. We just hired a new president of our visitors bureau, and he came in from Springfield, Missouri. And one of the first things he looked at is he looked at the president of GoTopeka, our economic development organization, and said, "Do we have a joint marketing plan?" And she said, "No, they're separate." And he goes, "But they're created out of the same marketing. Why don't we have a joint marketing plan?" So now our EDO and our DMO are actually working together to put together a joint marketing plan, which I can't believe I didn't think about that. But that's just another great opportunity that we have there.
Yeah. I see it all the time where you have a chamber getting their marketing out, and you've got a visitor, you know, CVB and economic development. They're all doing different messages, different logos, different imaging of the city, you know, from their own vantage point. And it's like, I think that might work better if you kind of come together with the plan. So that's awesome. Well, as we start wrapping things up here, I did want to ask you, what would be one action item, one piece of advice that you would give to any chamber champions that are listening to help take their organization up to the next level?
So for me, it's is absolute just a passion for your community. I think sometimes when we're in these professions that we feel like that we have a job, but we really don't have a job. I mean, I think most of us could probably go down the street and work for one of our corporate members and make a lot more money. Mm-hmm. I almost compare this. We're very mission driven. It's almost like a ministry in a way, but I mean, without doing what we do, there are people who aren't going to have a job, and there are people who aren't going to have prosperity, and there are people who aren't going to have a meal if we don't do what we do. So I think every Sunday going into your week, realizing that your community is that there are people in your community who are actually relying on you to make sure that they eat, that they have an income, that they have prosperity. If you realize that that's the difference that you're making in your community, the rest actually works itself out.
I love the idea of that mindset. I think I've met so many chamber professionals that have flat out told me, "I don't do this for the money." You know, it's kind of like a school teacher, you know, they don't do it for the money, but the impact that you can have is huge. So having that mindset and really setting the table for how you can go about your work, I think is so important. So thank you for sharing that. One question I like to ask everybody that I have on the podcast, and it's been interesting this year as we've seen chambers of commerce through a different lens with the COVID-19 pandemic. But as we look to the future, how do you see the future of chambers of commerce and their purpose going forward?
Well, I think that, and for the most part, I would say our communities probably appreciate us more now than they did pre-pandemic. Especially as we've held the hands of business and small businesses throughout this thing. So I think that our unique brand identity has been, there's a silver lining. It's been improved. I mean, there was a blatant need for what chambers were doing. A big shout out to the U.S. Chamber, the way that they guided us through the pandemic. But we're also going to be at the tip of the spear in community and economic recovery. It is going to take a little while. And so I think that we're going to be talking about 2020 for a long time. I do encourage us to not look backwards too much and to not focus on it in a negative way. But I really think that with a vengeance, Chambers will lead the way to full economic and community recovery in 2021 and beyond.
Absolutely. And in fact, as this episode airs, it's coming out on January 5th. So we're beginning of 2021. And I'm sure by now, everybody's realized that the stroke of midnight, January 1st, 2021, that everything wasn't fixed. You know, it's not the year 2020. So I agree. I mean, we will be talking about it for a long time, but let's not look back at it with the negative perspective. Let's take what we've learned from it and move forward and find those solutions.
Brandon, let me say one thing. I like saying this because it's powerful. I think that if you show me a community that doesn't have a strong, well-funded, professionally staffed chamber, you're showing me a community that does not care about itself.
Mm-hmm. Powerful. Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to have to do an image of that quote for this episode. That is powerful. Well, Matt, as we finish things up here, I wanted to thank you for taking time out of your day to chat with me here on the Chamber Chat podcast. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to put any contact information out there for anyone listening who'd want to get in contact with you about anything that you've discussed today or to continue this discussion offline. What would be the best way for them to reach out and connect?
Well, one of the downsides to creating a partnership is you end up with long email addresses. But I'm going to give it to you anyway. It is at.pavarnik@topekapartnership.com. And that is the best way to get a hold of me, matt.pavarnik@topekapartnership.com.
And I will get that updated in the show notes too, so people can look that up and not have to try to catch every word, every letter of that email address. But the show notes page will be found at chamberchatpodcast.com/episode102. But again, Matt, thank you so much for spending time with us today and sharing your perspective there at the Greater Topeka Partnership and being that champion for others to look up to. I appreciate it.
And Brandon, thank you for what you're doing for our industry. I really appreciate that too.
If you are a chamber professional, please subscribe to Chamber Chat Podcast in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. When you subscribe to Chamber Chat Podcast, new episodes will show up in your podcast app each week as they are released. If you're finding value in this podcast, please leave us a rating and a review in iTunes. But most importantly, please share Chamber Chat Podcast with your colleagues that are in the industry. As a podcast listener and as a chamber leader, have you considered the benefits that podcasting could have for your chamber? This is what I like to call the podcast pivot. If you're like many chambers, you're always looking for ways to provide non-involvement value to your member investors. Many chambers are finding that podcasting is a great solution. A podcast platform becomes a media arm for your organization that builds trust in your community, tells the stories about your members as well as your advocacy efforts, and becomes a valuable, tangible asset for non-dues revenue. If you'd like to see if podcasting is a good fit for your chamber, visit chamberchatpodcast.com/pivot to learn more and to gain access to our free chamber podcasting guide. Again, this is found at chamberchatpodcast.com/pivot.